So, there I was, out with my German Shepherd, Max, on our usual evening walk. We'd taken this route around the outskirts of our little town in upstate New York countless times. It's the kind of place where everyone knows your name, but nobody really knows you for real. Well, at least not me. I moved here about 5 years ago, looking for a fresh start away from the city. I'm a freelance writer, which means I spend most days cooped up at home, just me and Max and the tapping of the keyboard. It was late September, and the leaves were doing their thing, turning all shades of fire. There was a chill in the air reminding me that winter was coming. We were on this stretch of path that runs parallel to the dense woods of the Adirondacks. The sun was setting and getting closer to the horizon, leaving behind a sky that looked like ink to me, with just the first few stars starting to peek through. Max was a bit more on edge than usual. His ears perked up as if he was trying to catch something I couldn't. I figured it was just a deer. We'd seen plenty in the woods before, but this time, he stopped dead in his tracks, staring into the trees with an intensity that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I tugged on his leash, trying to coax him along, but he was a statue, save for the low growl brewing in his throat. I squinted into the woods, trying to catch a glimpse of whatever had caught Max's attention. That's when I heard it, a sort of clicking sound, like dry branches snapping, but rhythmic, deliberate. It was getting closer, and I could feel this pressure in the air, thick and heavy. I wasn't scared, not yet, curious maybe, but nothing I knew of made a sound like that. The clicking grew louder, and from the shadow of the trees emerged a figure. It was tall, unnaturally so, and thin to the point of emaciation. Its skin was ashen, stretched over its bones like parchment. Its eyes were just empty sockets, and there was no way to tell what it was looking at. The legends of the Wendigo that I'd heard around campfires as a kid flooded back to me. Max's growl had turned into a full-on bark, the kind that says, "Danger." But the figure just stood there at the edge of the woods, unmoving and silent now. The air around us felt charged, and I knew we had to leave, had to get away from whatever this was and whatever was happening. My heart was racing, but I forced my feet to move, backing away slowly, not daring to turn my back on the figure. There was a stillness in the air that felt almost solid, like the world had paused on its axis. I didn't know what to do, call for help, snap a photo, run, but my body seemed to have made the decision for me. The figure, the Wendigo, if my mind wasn't playing tricks on me, had a presence that was both terrifying and mesmerizing. It was tall, way taller than any man I've ever seen, with limbs that seemed to stretch too long for its body. The moonlight gave its skin a silvery sheen and made its eyes, or where its eyes should have been, seem like voids. I reached down without looking, my hands shaking, and gripped Max's collar to have an extra hold on him. He was still barking, loud and fierce, but even his sound seemed to be swallowed up by the presence around that figure. I wanted to shout at it, to ask what it was, why it was here, but my voice was stuck somewhere in my chest, not to mention that it probably would not have understood my words. And then, slowly, it moved, or did it? The darkness played tricks, but I could have sworn it swayed, like a tree in a breeze that I couldn't feel. The clicking sound started up again, and this time, it was accompanied by a low, haunting whistle. The noise was unlike anything I'd ever heard, threading through the trees with an almost hypnotic quality. It was then, in that sliver of a moment, when my attention was split between looking at the figure and the strange sounds, that Max's collar slipped through my trembling fingers as he got away from me, dragging his leash. I gasped as I realized what was happening. He bolted towards the Wendigo with a ferocity that matched the pounding in my chest. "Max!" His name ripped from my throat. I sounded raw and desperate, but he didn't pause one bit, didn't turn back. I had a split-second decision to make: go after him or stay safe on the path. My feet made the choice before my head did, propelling me forward after him, into the brush, twigs snapping beneath my boots. I could barely see Max now, just the lighter parts of his fur catching the moonlight as he got close to the figure. The closer he got, there was this weirdness in the air as it seemed to ripple, like heat over asphalt. My breath came in sharp gasps now, and my voice was lost as the wind picked up. But then, Max stopped, mere feet away from the Wendigo. He wasn't barking anymore. He stood there, facing the figure, his body tense but not aggressive. The Wendigo mirrored him, motionless, a statue carved from the night itself. The standoff lasted only moments, yet it felt like hours. I was close enough now to see them clearly, the deep grooves in the creature's skin, the unnerving stillness of Max. They were communicating somehow, in a language that went beyond words, a silent understanding that passed between them. And then, as if the moment was too fragile to hold, the Wendigo turned, its form dissolving into the woods with the same eerie grace with which it had appeared. Max watched it go, then turned to look at me, his expression unreadable in the dark. I approached him slowly, half expecting him to run after the creature again. But as I reached him, he simply nuzzled his head against my leg, a gesture so normal and grounding that I could have cried. We walked back home, the woods silent behind us, the weight of the encounter heavy on my shoulders. Max stayed close, occasionally looking back as if to ensure the Wendigo hadn't returned. When we got inside, I double-checked every lock, every window, but as the hours ticked by, the terror of the encounter began to fade, replaced by an unshakable curiosity. What had Max understood that I hadn't? What silent pact had passed between beast and dog in the heart of the Adirondacks? These questions haunted me, but as the first light of dawn crept through my windows, I knew one thing for certain: our walks would never be the same again. So, I was on this trip out in the American Southwest, a place I'd heard stories about but never thought I'd see myself. It's funny how you end up in places you never plan on. A buddy of mine, Jackson, convinced me to take some time off from the grind in Chicago and just go. Find yourself in the desert, he said, like it was some kind of riddle. But he was a bit out there like that. Still, I listened to his suggestion, and so there I was, in the middle of nowhere in Arizona, with nothing but red sand stretching out in every direction. Now, I'm a city guy, born and raised. The closest I'd come to nature was the big park in downtown Chicago, with pigeons that had more street smarts than some people I knew. But after a rough breakup and a job that felt like it was going nowhere, the desert seemed like as good a place as any to lose myself for a bit. I flew out there and bought this cheap, old, beat-up camper van from someone I found online. The van seemed like it had seen better days in the 70s. But the plan was simple: drive around, hike a bit, sleep under the stars, and just be alone with my thoughts. I had been on the road for about a week when it happened. I was following this old map I'd bought from a gas station, the kind that's all creased and smells like spilled soda, when I found myself on the edge of Navajo Nation. I'd always had an interest in Native American culture, but reading about it and being there were two different things. There's a respect you start to feel for the land where you're in the middle of it. It's vast, and it's alive in a way that's hard to put into words. The spot I'd picked out for the night was right on the border of the reservation. It was legal to camp there, but it felt like I was pushing some sort of unspoken boundary. The sun had dipped below the horizon, and the first stars were starting to peek out. I lit a small fire, not too big. I didn't want to attract any negative attention, and settled in. The silence out there is loud. It's not like the city where there's always something going on. Out there, the silence is its own noise, if that makes any sense. Almost like it's humming. I must have dozed off because the next thing I remember is waking up to the chill and crackling of the fire dying down. I tossed some more wood on it, and that's when I noticed something was off. You know how you can tell when you're being watched? It was like that. I stood up and looked around, trying to see if maybe it was an animal drawn by the fire or the smell of my food. That's when I saw it. There was a figure on the ridge of the hill, not too far from my campsite. It was too big to be a coyote, and too still to be some part of nature. The shape of it was human-like, but wrong somehow, like a shadow that didn't fit the body casting it. I'm not a superstitious guy, but I've heard enough stories to know that some things you just don't mess with. I remembered tales of skinwalkers, creatures from Navajo legend that are said to be able to mimic humans and animals, that they wear the skins of their prey. The rational part of my brain told me it was just a person, maybe a local wondering what I was doing there, but the rest of me wasn't buying it. I called out, a simple hello. My voice sounded strange, too loud and too small at the same time. The figure didn't move, didn't respond. The fire crackled and popped, and I realized it was the only sound I could hear. No insects, no distant howls, nothing. That's when it moved, not walked or ran, but kind of flowed, like smoke caught in a breeze. It came down the ridge, not straight toward me, but at an angle, heading to the road. That's when I saw its eyes. They reflected the firelight like an animal's. My mouth was dry, hands shaking. I wasn't sure what to do. Running felt wrong, like it would trigger a chase, and I didn't want to find out how that would end. So, I stood my ground, trying to make myself seem big and unafraid. But who was I kidding? I was completely terrified. The figure's eyes were locked onto mine, and I could feel the weight of its gaze, heavy and intent. It didn't move any closer, just watched me, and I watched it back. It was a standoff, and I wasn't sure what the rules were. My mind was racing. Every horror story I'd ever heard was playing on repeat. But this wasn't a story. This was happening to me, right here, right now. Then it tilted its head, almost curiously, like it was puzzled by my being there. Was it trying to understand what I was doing in its territory? Or was it deciding what to do with me? My heart was pounding so hard I could feel it in my throat. The fire flickered, casting long shadows. And for a second, it looked like the figure had multiple limbs, all twisting and writhing. I blinked hard, trying to clear my vision, and when I looked again, it was just the one shape. But it seemed taller, or maybe it was my mind going haywire. I thought about the van, which was about 30 feet behind me at that point. Could I make it if I ran? My keys felt heavy in my pocket, a lifeline so close yet equally far. I took a slow, subtle step back, trying not to show my panic. The figure stepped as I did, a single, smooth step forward. It was then I realized the fire was dying again, the light dimming, and somehow that seemed to start sapping my courage. I swallowed hard, trying to moisten my dry throat enough to speak. "I'm not here to cause trouble," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. The figure didn't respond, didn't even acknowledge my words. I took another step back, and this time, the figure didn't move. I took that as a sign, maybe a good one, maybe not. I kept my eyes on it as I moved, one careful step at a time, back to the van. It felt like an eternity, each step a decision that I worried could end my life. When I reached the van, I didn't dare turn my back. I opened the door, the creaking sound impossibly loud. I slid inside, keeping my eyes on where the figure stood, but it was harder to make out now with the fire reduced to embers. I started the van, the engine sputtering to life, and still, I didn't look away. As I began to drive off, my eyes flicked to the rearview mirror, and that's when I saw it. The figure was following, not running, but moving at an inhuman speed. It was gliding over the ground as if it were part of the desert itself. My grip on the steering wheel was white-knuckled, and I pressed the gas pedal harder, the van kicking up a cloud of dust as I raced away from the figure that had me all confused. The road was bumpy, the van shaking, but I didn't slow down, not until I made it far away from that spot, and the surroundings took on the familiar shapes of rocks and cacti. Only then did I let myself breathe, let myself believe that I was away, safe, that it was over. But even now, as I sit in a crowded diner with the sun up and people around me, I can't shake the feeling of those eyes on me, of the silent figure that I'm still not sure what it was, or if it was even real. So there I was, halfway through my shift on a typical cool September night in the outskirts of Juneau, Alaska. That night, I wasn't expecting much action, since our little town is usually quiet, especially after dark. But then again, being a cop here, you kind of learn to expect the unexpected. I've been on the force for about 10 years now, and nothing really shakes me up anymore. Or so I thought. My dad was a cop, and so was my granddad. Guess you could say it runs in the blood. I took up the badge right out of high school, wanting to keep the streets safe like they did. I've seen my fair share of bar fights, domestic disputes, and the occasional lost tourist wandering too far from their cruise ship. But what happened that night? Well, it was a new one, even for me. This night, I was driving along the usual patrol route with Leonard Cohen's gravelly voice humming through the speakers. As I passed the old Thompson Road, something caught my eye. Something that wasn't the usual stray deer or the neighbor's dog out for a late night stroll. No, this was different. It was a light, or rather several lights, flickering in the dense woods beyond the roadside. They were bright and blue, with an unnatural pulsating rhythm. My first thought? Must be some kids with those new drones or lasers or LED lights messing around in the forest. So I turned the cruiser around, the gravel crunching beneath the tires, and headed toward the source of the lights. As I got closer, the hairs on the back of my neck started to stand up. Something about these lights didn't match up with any of the possibilities I had thought of. I parked the cruiser and took out my flashlight, the beam cutting through the night as I cautiously made my way through the underbrush. I knew I should have called it in, waited for backup, but my curiosity got the better of me. Just a few more yards, I told myself, then I'll radio it in. But that's when everything changed. That's when I saw it. There, in a small clearing, was what I can only describe as a craft. It was sleek and metallic, with no seams or rivets, nothing like the planes we see flying overhead from the military base. And those lights, they weren't just on the craft. They seemed to be part of it, like the thing was alive almost, and glowing. I stood there, trying to make sense of what I was looking at. No sound, no movement, just those eerie lights pulsing. Then, as if on cue, a panel or door began to open, and that's when they stepped out. Beings, not people. Not like any life form I recognized. They were tall, too tall, with skin that looked like a squid or an octopus. Weird example, I know, but that's what instantly came to my mind. And their eyes, if you could call them that, they were like pools of mercury. We stood there, me on one side of the clearing, them on the other. I wanted to reach for my radio, call for backup, but I unable to move. It wasn't fear, not really, it was more like they had a hold of me somehow. Or maybe it was the kind of fear you feel when you're faced with something so beyond your understanding that your brain can't even process it as a threat. I could see my breath in the air, feel the cold seeping into my bones, but I couldn't move. I couldn't even think. All I could do was watch as they moved about, their movements deliberate and purposeful. It was like they were inspecting the area. There was a rhythm to their steps, almost a pattern that felt both random and intentional. One of them, the one that seemed to be taking the lead, tilted its head ever so slightly. I don't know how I knew it was looking right at me, considering the lack of discernible features, but I felt it. It's hard to explain, but it's that feeling you get when you know someone's staring at you, even if you can't see them. That prickling sensation on the back of your neck, that instinctual awareness. I had that in spades. And then, without any warning, it walked towards me. Each step was measured, cautious, or was it curious? There was no sound. The distance between us closed, and I could see, no, not see, more like sense the intricacies of its skin. It was mesmerizing, and for a moment, I forgot to be scared. I forgot to be a cop. I was just a man, standing in the presence of the inexplicable. It stopped a few feet away from me, and that's when I noticed the others had encircled us, a silent audience to this terrifying meeting. I could feel my adrenaline surging, but my body was still a statue, refusing to obey any command to flee. Then it did something I'll never forget. It reached out a hand, and for a split second, I thought about retreating. But something inside me, call it foolish bravery or just plain foolishness, made me stay put. Its hand touched my forehead, and it was cold, colder than the Alaskan air around us. But it didn't hurt. There was a moment, brief and fleeting, where I felt a connection, like a current running between us. Images flooded my mind then, not my own memories, but sights and sounds and thoughts, I guess, from somewhere or someone else. I saw stars and skies I don't have names for, and landscapes that defied physics. Within minutes it ended, and the hand withdrew. The being stepped back, rejoining the circle, and I was left there gasping, trying to process the reality of what had just played through my mind. I didn't get much time to think it over, though, because in the next moment they boarded their craft without a sound. The panel sealed shut, the lights intensified for a brief moment, and then, with a faint whoosh, the craft lifted off. It didn't blast into the sky like rockets do. It simply drifted upward, gently, until it was just a speck against the night sky. I was alone again. My heart was still racing, my mind still reeling. What just happened? Did they mean me harm? Were they just curious? Or had they come with a purpose, a message conveyed through that touch? I eventually found the strength to move, to walk back to my cruiser, to pick up the radio. I hesitated, though. What could I say? Dispatch, I just had a close encounter of the third kind. They'd think I'd lost it, or worse, that I was unfit for duty. I decided to keep it to myself, at least for the time being. I drove back to the station, wrote up a report about a strange light sighting, leaving out the little green men, of course, and went home. I didn't sleep that night, or many nights after. That encounter, it changed something in me. I wonder who's out there, looking back, maybe thinking about the strange being they encountered on a small blue planet. And I wonder what they shared with me in that brief touch. What did they want? I still don't know. But I'm a cop, and every day I've got a new mystery to solve, which keeps me busy. Maybe one day, though, I'll find the answers to this mystery. Until then, I'll keep plodding along and keeping up with my work. Hi there. I'm a college student majoring in biology at Rutgers in New Jersey. I've always been into wildlife and stuff. You know, the usual birds, bugs, and even mammals. When I was a little kid, I'd spend all day out in the woods and always come home with some sort of insect or something in my pocket. And before you start to call me the geeky kind, let me just jump ahead of you and say it first. Yeah, I'm a geek. It was a weekend in late October, a typical chilly fall evening in the Pine Barrens. I was there for a field project, not about cryptids, mind you, but about the local ecosystem. I was camping out, collecting data on nocturnal animals. The Pine Barrens are huge, like really huge, and they've got this eerie silence at night that makes your ears go crazy. That night, I set up camp near a dense thicket, a few miles off any known trail. The plan was to stay up late, record some owl calls, maybe spot a fox or two. By midnight, the forest was dead quiet, except for the occasional hoot of an owl. I was jotting down notes when I heard it, a sound that wasn't quite animal, but not human either. It was this weird shrieking cry, distant yet piercing. It had a rhythm to it, like it was intentional. Curiosity got the better of me, and also I was excited about a new sound, so I decided to check it out. I grabbed my flashlight and headed towards the sound. As I got closer, the noise became more distinct, more unsettling. It was like a wail, but with a guttural quality that made my skin crawl. I moved cautiously, trying to avoid making noise, but the forest floor was littered with dry leaves, and each step sounded like a firecracker in the silence. Then I saw it. In a small clearing of moonlight stood a creature like nothing I'd ever seen. It was around 6 feet tall, with a head that seemed too big for its body, and eyes that reflected the moonlight like a cat's. Its body was thin, almost emaciated, with skin that looked like leather. But what I instantly noticed was its wings, large bat-like wings that were folded behind it. I froze, not out of fear, but out of sheer disbelief. My mind was racing, trying to rationalize this animal, this creature. It couldn't be the Jersey Devil. That thing was just a legend, right? But there it was, standing not more than 30 yards from me. You hear these stories, these legends, where cryptids are portrayed as monsters. but this was different. It had an almost human-like curiosity in its eyes, the way it tilted its head, observing me. It started to walk around the clearing, its movements deliberate and slow. Every so often, it would stop and glance back at me, as if making sure I was still there. It felt like it was inviting me to follow, to understand something. I know how this sounds, but in that moment, it felt like we were two beings, just trying to figure each other out. That's when it hit me. All the legends, the stories, they were born out of fear, out of not understanding what this creature was. Here it was, a living, breathing being, not a monster, but something else. Something that didn't fit into our neat categories of the world. The creature turned away from me then, walking towards the denser part of the forest. I followed at a distance, driven by a mix of fascination and a sense of connection. It moved with a grace that seemed out of place in the rugged wilderness of the Pine Barrens. As it walked, it glanced back at me, as if reassuring itself that I was still there. We reached a point where the woods became too dense for me to follow, without making a lot of noise. The creature stopped and looked at me one last time. That look, it's hard to describe. It wasn't just animalistic. There was an intelligence there, a depth that you don't see in wild animals. The creature's gaze held mine for what felt like an eternity. In those eyes, I saw the same curiosity that had driven me into these woods, to study, to understand. Then, subtly, the creature's demeanor shifted. It was a subtle change, but I sensed a kind of resignation in its posture, a recognition that our encounter was coming to an end. It was as though it had shared what it could. And now it was time to retreat back into the mystery from which it came. In the days and weeks that followed, I found myself returning to that encounter in my mind, turning it over, examining it from every angle. The memory of the creature's gaze stayed with me. I read up on every piece of Jersey Devil lore I could find, but nothing seemed to capture the experience I had. It was as if the creature I met was something beyond the stories and the fear they inspired. That encounter in the Pine Barrens opened my eyes, and to not just believe the things were told. I went back to my studies with a new perspective, a new respect for the unknown elements of the natural world. I can't prove what I saw that night. I have no evidence, no photographs, nothing but my own experience. But sometimes, I think that's enough. The world is full of wonders, and not all of them are meant to be understood. Some are just meant to be experienced, to remind us that there is always more to learn, more to explore. So, that's the story. It's not a tale of terror or a sensationalized monster story. It's just an experience, one that I'll carry with me for the rest of my life. All right, let me take you back to the fall of 2006. I was a seasoned park ranger at Yosemite National Park, having spent a good chunk of my life wandering, monitoring, and preserving the vast expanses of the park. It was my turf, you could say, and not much that happened there could escape my eyes or ears. I knew the lay of the land like the back of my hand. I've been in or near nearly every nook, cranny, and crevice of my territory. This day, I was out on a routine boundary patrol near the Ostrander Lake. The sun was beginning to dip below the horizon, casting an orange hue. The air was crisp, and the only sounds were the distant calls of a Steller's Jay. It was peaceful as usual. I decided to check in on one of the lesser-used trails, a narrow path that wound through a dense stand of old-growth pines. It was there, as the light started to fail, that I saw something I couldn't explain. There was a figure standing off the trail in a clearing. At first glance, I thought it was a hiker, maybe someone in need of help. But as I approached, I realized this was no person. It stood towering over me with a posture that suggested that it knew a lot, a creature that knew how to stand its ground. Its skin was an odd, shimmering green, like the scales of a fish, but with the texture of leather. Its eyes were a bright, unnatural yellow, holding me in place with an intensity I've never felt before. I reached for my radio instinctively, but the static that came through was harsh, grating, and unnerving. The creature didn't move, even with the harsh static noise. It just stared, and I could see now that it had a kind of armor on its chest. Natural, maybe, but who knows? Trying to keep my composure, I took a step back, slowly, to increase the distance between us. But the creature stepped forward, maintaining the close distance. I wasn't sure if it was a sign of intelligence or instinct, but I wasn't about to test which it was. Then it did something that will stick with me till my last day. It looked up to the sky and made a sound. It wasn't a growl or a hiss, but a kind of low hum, a vibration that seemed to resonate in the very air around us. I felt it in my bones, a sound that I knew was a call out to others like it. Then it started a series of clicking as if it was responding to an unseen ally. Eventually, the creature turned and walked away with a gait that was eerily human-like. It moved with purpose and disappeared into the trees. I've heard stories from hikers and campers, tales of strange sights and sounds in the woods, but I always took them with a grain of salt. But now, here I was, a rational, trained park ranger, questioning the reality of what my own eyes had just seen. I didn't sleep much that night, my mind replaying the encounter over and over. By morning, I had made a decision. I couldn't just sit on this. It was too big, too strange. But I also knew I had to be careful about who I told. I've seen what happens when stories like this get out. They take on a life of their own, twisting into something unrecognizable. And the last thing I wanted was a circus descending on Yosemite. I love this park too much to let that happen. So, I confided in my supervisor, expecting skepticism, maybe even a laugh. But the look on his face was grave, and he listened intently, asking only necessary questions. He believed me, or at least he believed that I believed what I'd seen, and that's all I needed. We decided to keep it quiet, to conduct a discreet investigation. I felt a mix of relief and anxiety, relieved that I wasn't alone in this, but anxious about what we might find. We started by combing through recent reports, looking for anything out of the ordinary. Missing hikers, strange sightings, reports of odd noises. We dug through it all. It was a few days later when I returned to the site of the encounter. My supervisor insisted I take someone with me, but I refused. This was personal. I found the clearing, and it was just as it had been, undisturbed. No footprints, no broken branches, no sign that the creature had been there at all. It was a clear day too, and the sunlight filtered through the pine needles. I remember thinking that it should have been beautiful, but all I felt was a hollow uneasiness. I took out my notebook, a small habit from years of documenting poachers and vandals. Methodically, I started taking notes of the area, anything that might be used as a reference. I wasn't sure what I was looking for, but I felt compelled to look for something, anything that could explain what happened. It was then I noticed something odd about the bark of a nearby tree. It was subtly scored in a pattern that wasn't natural. I examined it closer, and it became clear that it was a marking, deliberate and precise, not something made by nature. The marks were too uniform, too intentional. I took notes describing what it looked like. My hands were steady, trained by years of experience, but my heart was anything but. This was a clue, a tangible piece of evidence. It meant something, though I couldn't begin to guess what. The rest of the day passed in a blur. I continued my search, moving further and further out from the clearing, but I found nothing more. As the sun began to set, I headed back, the feeling of being watched creeping over me with every step. I told myself it was just nerves. Back at the station, I pored over the notes. Those markings were unlike anything I had seen in my career, neither human nor animal. That night, I finally managed to sleep, but it was fitful and filled with dreams of yellow eyes, and the hum that felt like something was really wrong. There was something here, something real and inexplicable, and I had to understand it. My duty as a ranger had always been to protect the park and its inhabitants, but now I felt a new duty, to uncover the truth of what was sharing the wilderness with us. The investigation continued, quieter and more determined than ever. We expanded our search, bringing in a few trusted colleagues, each of them as baffled as we were. Every lead, every strange report was followed up on, but they all led to dead ends. It was as if the creature, whatever it was, had vanished into thin air. We're still thinking about, even though it's over 25 years later, but it's more in the background now. But rest assured, if there is any future development, you'll be one of the first people I share it with. Okay, let me set the scene for you. This isn't something I usually talk about, not just because it sounds out there, but also because even now, I get this eerie feeling just thinking about it. You ever been to one of those spiritual retreats? The kind where you're supposed to find yourself or whatever? Well, I did once, and let's just say I found a lot more than I bargained for. So, I was in this small town in Nevada, right at the edge of the desert. The place was called Spirits Canyon. Not on any map, but it's not hard to find if you know who to ask. I was at a point in my life where things were just off. A friend mentioned this retreat where people went to align their energies and all that jazz. I figured I had nothing to lose. The retreat was this cluster of cabins circling a central communal area. It had a fire pit, a few benches, and a large decrepit statue of some sort of animal. At least, I think it was an animal. The people there were friendly enough, a mix of folks you'd expect to see, and some you wouldn't. I settled into my cabin, which was basic but comfortable. The first couple of days were fine. We'd meditate, share stories, eat simple meals, and take long walks in the area around us. But it was on the third night that things took a turn. That evening, the air was cooler than usual, and the sky was this deep shade of blue. I stepped out of my cabin because sleep was playing hard to get, and I thought a walk might do me some good. I wandered away from the main area. I remember looking up at the stars, thinking how they seemed to shimmer in the sky. As I walked, I noticed something odd about that animal statue in the center of the retreat. From the corner of my eye, it looked like it had moved. I laughed at myself for the thought. Statues don't move, right? But as I got closer, I couldn't shake off the feeling that I had seen it move. I stopped walking. The statue, I could swear, was facing a different direction now. Its head turned towards the mountains in the distance. Curiosity got the better of me, and I decided to take a closer look. As I approached, the air got colder, and the silence of the area was incredibly noticeable. I was right in front of the statue when that happened. There was no sound, no warning. One second, I was staring at this worn stone figure, and the next, the air in front of me twisted, warped. It was like the night itself rippled, and from that ripple stepped out something. It was tall, easily 7 feet, with skin that seemed to drink in the light around it. It had eyes, if you could call them that, which were like melted gold, shiny and fluid. I stood there, my heart racing so fast I could feel it in my throat, but not from fear. It was like my body understood something my mind didn't, that I was in the presence of something very powerful. We just looked at each other, me and this being. I don't know how long we stood there, but it felt like time had stopped just for us. Then it tilted its head, as if considering me, and it spoke. Not with words, though. It was like its thoughts just appeared in my mind, clear as if I'd thought them up myself. It asked me why I was there, what I was looking for. Its voice in my head was like the last whisper of a dream, fading as you wake. I tried to answer, I really did, but my voice was stuck. It's hard to describe, but in those moments of connection, or whatever it was, it felt like it understood me better than I understood myself. And that's a strange feeling, knowing something else, something so alien, could see you so clearly. I didn't sleep that night. How could I? Every time I closed my eyes, I saw those molten gold flickers staring back at me. Come morning, I was a mess. The other people at the retreat gave me glances. I must have had a strange look on my face, but I couldn't begin to explain what had happened. I mean, who would believe it? The day dragged on. We did our group sessions, meditated, ate in silence. I was there, but not really. My mind kept replaying the night before. I was anxious for night to fall again, half out of fear, half out of a desperate need to understand. Finally, the day ended, and our scheduled events were over. I couldn't stay away. I was drawn back to that statue. I approached it cautiously, my heart pounding, but nothing happened. It was just a statue again. I felt a mix of relief and disappointment. Had I imagined it all? Was the stress of my life finally getting to me? Was I purging something here at the retreat that manifested itself in the statue? That was a weird thought. I decided to sit there, right in front of the statue, and just wait. Hours passed. The night was quiet, so quiet I could hear the blood thrumming in my ears. Then, without any fanfare, the demon was back. The air didn't ripple this time. It was just there. This time, I managed to find my voice. "What are you?" I whispered. I felt like I was a single drop of water trying to understand the ocean. It was overwhelming, terrifying, and awe-inspiring all at once. "Why are you here?" I asked, my voice steadier than I felt. I asked it then what it wanted from me. It didn't need to answer because I knew. It was a reflection, a mirror. It was here to show me my own depths, to help me face the parts of myself I'd been running from. As dawn approached, I noticed that it was gone. I must have fallen asleep at some point, and so I stood. I left the retreat that day. I didn't say goodbye to anyone. I couldn't. I drove for miles in silence, trying to process what had happened. I don't have all the answers, not by a long shot, but I started to fill the void with things that mattered. I faced parts of myself I had ignored, embraced the parts I'd hidden. The experience at Spirit's Canyon, it changed me. And sometimes, when the night is deep and the stars are bright, I feel that presence and see it as a valuable lesson I learned. It's out there, somewhere, watching, waiting. For what, I don't know. But I'm no longer afraid. I'm ready for whatever comes next. I'd like to tell you about a night that's still etched in my memory like it happened yesterday, but this one unfolded in the swamps of Louisiana, around the Atchafalaya Basin. It's a place that's both beautiful and eerie, where the water's like a mirror, reflecting the twisted shapes of the cypress trees. Well, let's just say they can play tricks on your ears when the sun goes down. I've been wearing the badge in St. Martin Parish for more years than I care to count. Started as a patrol officer and worked my way up to detective. It's not the kind of place that makes national headlines, but it's home, with all the quirks and shadows you'd expect from a community living on the edge of an ancient swamp. This case, it was a missing fisherman, a guy who knew the waters better than he knew the back of his own hand. His boat was found drifting near Whiskey Bay, engine still running, tackle box open, like he'd just stepped out for a moment and forgot to come back. Search teams scoured the area, but after 48 hours, there wasn't a whisper of where he might have gone. That's when I got called in, to piece together the puzzle everyone else had given up on. The Atchafalaya is a world unto itself. You step off solid ground and everything changes. The air gets thicker, sounds are muffled, and every direction looks the same. Water, trees, and the endless play of shadow and light. I went in as the sun was setting. I had my boat, my gear, and a map that was as much use as a screen door on a submarine, considering how the channels out here change with every storm. Directions were useless. I was there to find answers, but the swamp, it's got a way of swallowing secrets and throwing them to the Spanish moss that hangs like ghostly curtains from the branches. As night fell, I cut the engine, listening. There's life in the swamp that doesn't care about human comings and goings. But over the croak of bullfrogs and the rumble of the wind, I heard it, a sound that didn't belong, a wail, a cry that seemed so out of place that it left me with nothing but a shiver that wasn't from the chill. That's when I saw it, or thought I did, a shadow against the shadows, taller than any man, with eyes that caught the faint light. I reached for my flashlight, but something inside me said that was a bad idea. So I just watched, and the figure, it seemed to know I was there. The locals have a name for this thing. I knew it instantly from whispered stories that are told and retold, until nobody's sure what's true anymore. They call it the Rougarou, the Cajun werewolf, a creature that's more spirit than flesh, a guardian of the swamp that takes a keen interest in those who tread too deep into its domain. That night, with the wind blowing, I felt like an intruder in a world where I didn't belong, where this Rougarou creature was the law. Now, I'm not superstitious, never have been. But out there, you can't help but feel there's something ancient, something primal, that defies our modern notions of what's real and what's just legend. The Rougarou, they say, is a shapeshifter, a spirit of the swamp that can curse you with just a look, turn you into a creature like itself if you're not careful. And there it was, a figure shrouded in the darkness, its presence undeniable. It stood upright, with a silhouette that suggested power, something wild and untamed. It wasn't threatening, didn't growl or make any move to attack. It just stood there watching me, and I got the sense it was curious, maybe even amused by my boldness or stupidity. The Rougarou shifted, a subtle movement that seemed to ripple through the swamp. It was then I realized the creature wasn't alone. The swamp itself seemed to be connected to its movements, like the trees were its limbs, the water its skin. Time lost meaning as we stood there. The night sounds resumed, a gator's splash, the hoot of an owl, the distant call of a night heron. And with each minute that passed, I felt a growing respect for this creature. This guardian that I knew for certain was more than just a story to scare children. Then, as suddenly as it had appeared, the Rougarou backed away, dissolving into the fog that rose from the water's surface. I stayed still for a long while after, not daring to break the stillness that had settled over the swamp. When I finally started my boat's engine and made my way back to the real world, I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd been given a rare gift, a glimpse into a world that exists alongside ours. They found the fisherman, safe but shaken. He spoke of a presence that kept the other creatures away from him, a feeling of being watched over by something he couldn't see, but could feel. As for me, I filed my report, left out the part about the Rougarou, of course. They wouldn't understand, couldn't understand. Some things you keep to yourself because words just cheapen the experience, make it small and ordinary. Words can never capture strong emotions, if you ask me. But every so often, I go back to the Atchafalaya, to the spot where I saw the Rougarou. I don't know if I'm looking for it or just paying my respects. Either way, the swamp knows me now. Or maybe it's more like I now know the swamp. I understand it better. I can't help but feel that I'm part of the story because of what I've seen. With my own chapter in the tale of the Rougarou, what they call the spirit of the swamp.